What do you think makes somebody a good communicator?
I see a lot of people that come to me, they're very concise. They're great at giving a one-word response, but they don't know how to add any more. And they want to be more confident and be able to just talk, talk, talk. But then the people that do just talk, talk, talk want to be able to rein it in, and they struggle to be concise. So I think understanding that is a middle ground of being able to flex is really the area that you're wanting, and that's what a good communicator is.
What advice would you have for people that are listening to this podcast right now that want to get better at communicating, want to be able to speak more confidently in public, but do have a habit of putting themselves down, are their own biggest critic?
One of the really easiest ways to address that is to notice how you're speaking to yourself, because some people are aware and they know what thoughts come up time and time again, and other people have no idea. So getting conscious of what you're actually saying to yourself. And then the second thing is to...
Emily, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am really excited to have you on today. As I was saying before we're going to dive into this chat, I was always looking for interesting people, and your LinkedIn profile really stood out to me because you talk a lot about communication and you really help people in tech and cyber especially learn to communicate. And I think that's really something that I'm seeing in the recruitment industry, especially my clients ask for. We want good communicators, Georgie. We want people who can, you know, come in and really, you know, work with the stakeholders, work with the business. So before we dive into obviously how you help people communicate better, can you just give a little bit of a backstory into yourself, your journey, and also your own public speaking journey as well? Because I saw you also did Toastmasters, which I used to do as well. So I'd love to hear about where it all started for you.
Okay, sure. And thank you for having me. This is it's the second official gig that I'm doing after having my second child.
Oh.
So yeah, very much looking forward to it. So I started my career in cybersecurity. I did a maths degree, a pure maths degree, and a master's of cybersecurity. And getting into the corporate world with that type of background, and I was a fairly shy, definitely not what you would call a confident child, I hated presenting. So when I would get up and try and speak, all the knowledge and the thoughts and the preparation that I had done just did not translate for me. And I found that so frustrating. As someone that is, I like to think that I have quite high standards myself. I like to think that I'm quite determined. Not being able to perform when it really mattered the most was devastating to me, to be perfectly honest. And so I thought, okay, how am I going to get better at this? And one of the first things I did was I joined Toastmasters. And I also asked people that I was seeing present for their story, because I was always curious to know. I love the way you presented as an example. Have you always been this good? And both through Toastmasters and through those conversations, what I learned was that most people had to work at it. And public speaking was definitely a skill that I could learn and not one that I had to be born with. So I think that realization really helped me. So I thought, okay, if it's something that I can learn and get better at, then I'm just going to learn and get better at it. I'm just going to apply myself and learn as much as I can and see if I can go from a place of been completely petrified to a place where either I can get my message across or I can enjoy myself in the process. One of the next most fundamental things that I learned and that happened was the power of storytelling. So for me, learning about storytelling and being able to integrate storytelling into the way that I communicate was an absolute game changer. I never quite understood how to present in the corporate world. And it always, you know, like, how do you get out so much information in a short amount of time, whether you're talking about yourself, whether you're talking about a complicated tool or something like that. But learning how to communicate that in a way that anyone could understand was really helpful for me. And that was pretty much the main catalyst for changing from a career in cybersecurity to changing to doing what I'm doing. Because as soon as I learned about storytelling, I was like, oh, now that I'm talking to people, it's so much more enjoyable. And I also, not only did I start to enjoy it, but I wanted to share what I had learned. So as I started to share what I had learned, things organically happened. And then I started to transition into doing that more. And then I ended up where I am now, where I'm a public speaking coach. So that is essentially my career journey and how I got to doing what I'm doing now. And sorry, did you ask about my definition of a clear communicator as well?
No, but I'd love to go into that because I want to just sort of like take a moment because I think this is really, really powerful because I do, having worked, recruited in technology for a long time now, what's sort of being asked a lot more, what I'm finding from a lot of my clients is we want good communicators, communication, communication, communication. I think in the age of AI and all of the progression that we're going to be seeing over this next decade, it is going to be those softer skills that are more sought after. And when it comes to that communication piece, this is where I do think a lot of the tech professionals that I've worked with in the past have really fallen short on. So I love the fact that you identified, first and foremost, that was something that you fell short on and then did something about it. Could you just taking a step back from when you got going back into your cybersecurity years, when you started to apply the knowledge that you were learning from your public speaking, you know, doing the Toastmasters, what benefit did you experience from learning to communicate better in your career at that point?
Yeah. Not as much as I wish I had got, as in I wish I'd learned it all years and years earlier when I was at the start of my career, because I would have been able to apply it the whole time. But people could understand what I was talking about. And you can tell when someone's getting what you're talking about, right? Like, you know, I never really had those cases where someone would say, like, that was a terrible presentation. People would generally say, like, oh, that was, you know, that was good, being really nice. But when you get to the point where people say, like, oh, like that really connected with me. I told that story that you shared to someone else, or I can now understand it in a way that I never did before. And I can share that story with someone else because it made so much sense to me. So being able to move from a place where, you know, it's not really resonating with people and it's hard to get buy-in as well on, say, a tool as an example, to go into a place where people are much more receptive, they can understand the value of what it is, and it's easier to influence people to do something that they otherwise might not really want to do or feel like is a bit of a tick in the box. So one of the things that I used to look after when I was in the corporate world was a security-related toolkit, and nobody initially saw the value in it. And I thought that that was just because no one really liked security and it was a bit boring. But what I had learned was that it was the way I was messaging it, and I was focusing on the tool and not really talking about the benefits to the end user. And so as I changed that, it completely shifted the way that people would respond. However, as I caveated at the start, I learned these things so late into my career that I only had a few years of starting to improve them. Whereas if I had have learnt them, say, 10 years earlier, it would have been a massively different story.
Mm. Yeah, and I can definitely relate to that story as well, because I did Toastmasters, God, oh, I want to say almost 4 years ago now. And I did it for almost 2 years and then I moved state. So I stopped doing it. But in those 2 years, every single week I rocked up consistently. And it's interesting because you said at the start, you were quite shy. And so was I in school. Confidence is something that over the years I have had to work on. Yeah. And what I've come to realize, and I love your thoughts on this, is that confidence comes from courage. It comes from putting ourselves in uncomfortable positions, from taking risk and really then, yeah, putting ourselves into these uncomfortable situations like public speaking, for example. So talk to me about when you joined Toastmasters, because I'd love to hear your story on it. Because I remember the first time I did a speech, I think I blacked out. I literally almost passed out. I was so nervous. My heart was pounding. I was sweating. Yeah. But at the end of it, I felt amazing. And then that's gradually how I got better and the confidence grew. What was your journey with Toastmasters like?
Yeah, well, I remember The first session that I was in, I actually did feel a very much sense of family. So I felt less pressure in the Toastmasters environment than I did in my work environment. And I think that was one of the things that I loved about it, was everyone else was on a similar journey. It was very non-judgmental. And it didn't actually matter whether you got it right or not. Whereas in a industry like the cybersecurity industry, there is a lot of pressure, right? Because you can't just laugh it off. It does matter if you say it right or not. You can't be talking to the business about cybersecurity controls or risks and not get your message out clearly, right? So there are quite serious ramifications. So for me, getting into Toastmasters, I do remember that feeling of, okay, this is a safe space. But my first talk, my first speech, I think it's a little bit different to what it is now, the format, but I remember doing a talk on myself, and similar to you, I remember doing it. I was nervous, but I wasn't as nervous as I was when I was doing a technical presentation to real stakeholders, and I felt amazing afterwards. And my top value in life is growth. So for me, learning something new is exhilarating. And also feeling like, okay, now I have some knowledge that I can take back into the corporate world. And I realized how I had to completely turn everything that I was doing on its head. And the other thing that I do remember in Toastmasters, a funny thing was how many ums and ahs I said. So back then, they now have a tool to do it, but back then they had a person that was the ah counter. And I think I said about 33 in a 7-minute speech, and I was horrified. So I went on a separate journey to try and remove the filler words, because I didn't want to have something in there that was going to take away from the power of what I was saying.
Yeah, I remember that person. I think I was that person counting the ums and ahs and what I was saying. You know a lot, was my filler. They were my filler words. But
yes,
what I think those types of environments are really good at, it's like you say, it's non-judgmental. Everyone's there to learn, to grow and support one another. Now, obviously in the corporate world, like you just said then, when you're standing up to do a presentation, when you're dealing with stakeholders, especially now, cybersecurity now is one of it's the most top sought after skills in the recent LinkedIn job research. So cybersecurity is number one now. 70% of that is women. So there's a whole other topic in itself. We need more women into cybersecurity because it is the future. But it is something that's quite serious, like you say. Like, everybody's now concerned about the security.
Yeah.
So when it's interesting, actually, we placed a female recently into a business, and I was speaking to her the other day, and she is somebody that is working on her confidence to speak to the business, speak to shareholders. So when you're doing your sort of one-on-one coaching and you're helping tech professionals get better at communication, where do you start? Like, what's the first step?
It depends on the person, to be perfectly honest. So when I'm doing private coaching, I always try and understand where someone is and where they want to get to, because everyone's at a different stage in their journey and everyone has certain things that they find harder than the rest. But to generalize the answer to the question, having an understanding of how to structure what it is that you're communicating is really important. And that's generally where I start with people. Whether you're verbally communicating it or whether you're writing something, it really doesn't matter. Either way, you need some sort of structure, and it doesn't have to be something rigid, but you do need to know when you're talking or when you're writing, how am I going to structure what I'm going to say? So especially when it's something off the cuff, I know for a lot of my clients that they find off the cuff questions to be really nerve-wracking because they can't prepare. But in fact, you can prepare in a way for off the cuff type of questions, because if you know how to respond, how is a good way to respond to an off the cuff question in terms of a structure, I feel like it's a little bit like, you know, when you go bowling and you have the bumpers around the bowling alley and you know you can't get it into the alley or whatever it's called, you're pretty much going to get a strike. You just need to roll the ball down. That's how I feel it is in terms of the structure. If you know some guide rails for which you need to respond, that can be very helpful and can boost your confidence. Then you can move on to to practicing and adding things like storytelling, etc. And then there's always an element of mindset. So doesn't matter how prepared you are and how much you know about structure and storytelling, if you haven't thought about how your mind is working and your inner voice and inner critic, then that can also derail you as well.
Absolutely, it can. And hence why I've called this podcast Career Confidence, because I think that is the foundation that a lot of things are built on. So let's take that scenario then, because this actually did happen to somebody I know recently. She was in a situation and she was asked a question that she didn't know the answer to. In those situations, in your opinion, and what you've seen in your own sort of career journey, what is a good response? Is it, I don't know the answer, or I'm going to have to go away and research that, let me come back to you? What should we do in those situations if we just generally don't know the answer to a question?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, it does depend on the question, and I don't want to sound like I keep going back with that particular response, but I think there's some questions where the stakes aren't that high. So maybe if I'm talking about an incident or something like that, you don't want to make assumptions, and potentially depending on the type of stakeholder it is, if it's external audit or something like that. But if you're talking to a group where the stakes aren't as high and they've got a general question about something, and you can make an assumption and then perhaps go validate that assumption, then I would do that. So I would think about, can I make an educated guess here? And is that okay? Or if not, then I would say, look, I don't know. That falls either outside of my scope, or I haven't had experience in that yet, or I'm not quite sure. Let me follow up and get back to you. But that I wouldn't go with that as a cookie cutter approach in every single scenario. But I think a lot of women especially generally feel bad that they don't know the answer. Some men as well. And I can't say it's just a sex thing, but I don't think we should feel ashamed for not knowing an answer to something, because nobody knows everything. And that's one of the things that I have learned over the years, is to not be as hard on ourselves, because that's going to affect our performance. That voice in our head that's thinking that we have to be perfect, when in fact we don't have to be perfect. We're human, which means we're imperfect. So I think lowering my expectations has helped me feel a lot better when I'm faced with situations where I might not know the answer.
Absolutely. And we're all going to make mistakes. And one book that I read that was really profound in my own journey towards confidence and self-belief was, it was a book by Louisa Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. And she's an incredible woman. And anyway, what one thing that she said was that she never criticized herself after doing something hard. So for example, if she was to go on stage and do a speech or speak in anywhere in public, she would come off and the first thing she would do is say, Louise, that was fantastic. You know, you did a great job, and really like reinforce that this is the behavior that she wanted to install. And then 24 hours later, or, you know, a little bit later, she'd sit down with her journal and go, okay, how can I be even better next time? How can I improve? And then do that sort of, I guess, analysis afterwards. But what I think people have a tendency to do, so I've done it myself, is beat ourselves up straight away in that moment. And then that leads to then analysis paralysis. You don't want to ever do it again. And then fear just stops you in your track. So what advice would you have for people that are listening to this podcast right now, that want to get better at communicating, want to be able to speak more confidently in public, but do have a habit of putting themselves down, are their own worst, biggest critic? You mentioned the word mindset there before. How does this all play a part when it comes to communication and public speaking?
Yeah, well, one of the really easiest ways to address that is to notice how you're speaking to yourself, because some people are aware and they know what thoughts come up time and time again, and other people have no idea. So I think part of it is getting conscious of what you're actually saying to yourself. And then the second thing is to, I always try now and talk to myself as if it's my best friend, because we all know the way that we talk to ourselves, for a lot of us, is way harsher than we would ever say to anyone else. So, and it's something I've learned how to do this. I definitely didn't just switch the light and start talking to myself more kindly. But if I think either I'm talking to, well, I have two kids, if I think, would I talk to Zara like that? If not, then I will catch myself and I will reframe it. And that has made the biggest amount of difference. So whether, as you said, whether you've come off the stage or you've done a virtual presentation, instead of talking to yourself negatively, if you say, like, you were amazing given all the circumstances, you nailed it, right? You connected with people, etc. It's not about being perfect. So there's that element. Another element that I have found really useful is this thing I learned in a positive intelligence group, which was, it's this analogy of putting your hand on a stove. So physically, if you put a hand on a stove and you burn yourself, you wouldn't keep your finger there, right? You'd take it off straight away and go, ow, and then realize you don't want to do that again. Whereas in the emotional world, we tend to keep our finger on there and dwell in that space of, oh my God, like that was the worst. I'm an absolute mess. I can't believe I did that. And we, you know, in the past I have been like that. And as soon as I heard that particular tip is just take your hand off the stove. Take the lesson and move on. So now if I do stuff up something or if I feel like, oh God, that did not go the way that I wanted it to go, I will just take the lesson. And I always come back to that hand on the stove and I think, okay, I'll take the lesson. I won't do that again, but that's it. I'm not going to let it affect me. So that would be another thing. What is always a really good idea, though, if someone has very ingrained negative belief patterns, is to get them to write out what their negative beliefs are and then to get them to reframe them. Because one of the things that I think is really important to understand about a belief that we hold or something that we tell ourselves as well is generally it's not true if it is a limiting belief. So if it's something like everyone would have thought I was a failure, as an example, right? Is that actually true? Or, oh, I bored everyone because they were on their phones. Right? If you think that, write it down and then challenge yourself to see is that actually correct? Because in a lot of instances, we think it's true and we don't sense check it and then we let that stop us from doing things.
I can completely relate to what you're saying there, and beliefs are so powerful and it's how we reframe them. And it's been a massive journey that I've had to go on. And to be honest, when I reflect on a few things, I've tied a lot of my sense of worth into my job, into my career, into my business. And if I felt things weren't going well or things weren't progressing the way I want them to progress, I would then beat myself up and have this belief that I wasn't good enough and I was incapable, and really had to challenge those beliefs to say, well, mistakes are going to be made. It's all part of the journey, but every single failure is a stepping stone on the way to success. It's like reframing all of these things. It is so tough to do. And I guess in your own journey, because you've mentioned obviously that you've overcome a few, like, do you have any practices now? You mentioned like writing out the beliefs and questioning them, but anything else that you think, oh yeah, that really helped me reframe that, or that helped me have more of a growth mindset? Any sort of practices that you do every day, every week that have helped you?
I wouldn't say they're a practice. But I would come back to the element I talked about before in terms of being able to identify when you're saying something negative and reframe it. Having that skill and being able to do it even when you are feeling tired, because that's the time, right? When you're feeling tired, when you're feeling stressed, or when you're feeling overwhelmed, that's when you need that skill the most. So pushing yourself to continually work out that particular muscle and get that muscle strong is really important, because if you don't, then that's when you might go into a spiral, etc. So making sure I come back and speak kindly to myself is the single biggest practice that I would recommend anyone being able to do. The other thing, which it's not really a mindset thing, but learning the art of storytelling for me has been a massive element of feeling confident in my everyday life. It's not so much, as I said, a mindset thing, but feeling better about going into situations where I'm asked to talk, whether it's in a networking session, whether it's a podcast interview, whether it's a conference, whether it's a workshop, it doesn't really matter what it is. But knowing that I have those skills to fall back on always puts me at ease. And if I hadn't learnt storytelling and I didn't have that to fall back on, it wouldn't matter how much I told myself it's going to be okay. I wouldn't be able to feel okay, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does make sense. And I always say when I'm going through things that are challenging, it's a chapter, it's not my story. And I think that when we're sometimes in these situations that are tough, well, I used to have a tendency of being like, this is it now. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. And it's actually like, this too shall pass.
Oh,
whether it's
yes.
good, bad, just sort of learning. Actually, the biggest sort of growth for me recently has been actually learning just to let things go.
Yeah.
Just relax and release, not holding on to things, not like constantly stacking these things up, whether they're good or bad. Just learning just to accept and just surrender and just let things go through me. It's been a really big journey for me just to not hold on to anything in life.
And yes.
Yeah. And like that all goes back to like the whole beliefs and the mindset piece as well. But I'd really love to come on to now, Emily, about the whole communication piece, because I've had a lot of amazing people on this podcast, and these softer skills, this communication word keeps on being thrown around. And, you know, I was on a role briefing the other day and the client said, good communication. And I said, can you elaborate what you mean by that? You know, what exactly do you mean? So in your view, when you're coaching clients, what do you think makes somebody a good communicator?
Yeah. So I think you have to be able to be clear and be relatable, but you have to be able to know how to get a message to stick in someone's mind and also be able to influence them to act. So I always think of things in these threes as in relatable, memorable, and then persuasive. And that varies depending on the situation, right? So if you've got a situation where you've got 5 minutes to give your career backstory, how you get that across is obviously going to be a little bit different to if you've got a 30-minute talk to students, to a off-the-cuff question where you know you've probably only got 60 seconds to answer that in front of a board meeting. So you have to have an ability to be able to flex and know when being concise is the right approach, but have enough skills so that you can elaborate on that with a story as an example, but keep it within the time limit and keep it appropriate to the audience. So good communication to me is about being able to tailor it to the audience, to tailor it to the topic, to tailor it to the time limit as well, and the medium potentially, because if you are just a good, concise communicator, that doesn't always work. And if you're great at telling stories but you can't be concise, that also doesn't work as well. So being able to flex between the two is really important. And I think knowing that one is not better than the other is also really important, I think, for people's confidence. Because I see a lot of people that come to me and they want to, they're very concise. They're great at giving a one-word response, but they don't know how to add any more. However, and they want to be more confident and be able to just talk. But then the people that do just talk, want to be able to rein it in, and they struggle to be concise. So I think understanding that is a middle ground of being able to flex is really the area that you're wanting. And that's, in my view, what a good communicator is.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. That's been my journey. So I love a chat. I really love having good conversations. I love the podcast. And I actually listen back to all of the interviews that I do because I want to get better. And I listen and I go, oh, you didn't get to the point on that. And again, not criticizing myself, but just giving myself some constructive feedback, which is very important. Yes. I would like to work on that piece. Sometimes I'll go off on a tangent about something because I get really passionate about an answer a guest has just given. And then as I'm speaking, I think I've got quite a quick brain, probably been in sales for 10 years, I'll come up with a question as my mind is thinking, and then sometimes it won't come out the way I want it to come out. So what I've actually learned to do for myself, and I love your thoughts on this, is actually slow down.
Yeah.
Slow down and listen. This is what this podcast has given me, so many good skills, listening being one of them. Because I think part of the communication piece where I see the breakdown is people just don't listen. They just assume.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're just quick to jump in, give their 10 cents, and you go, actually, you've completely missed the point.
Yeah.
How often do you see that?
It's hard because generally I see people on a one-on-one basis. So it's hard to see them, and I wish I could see them in their native habitat. So it's hard to know whether they are or are not a good listener. But I would say that would be a massive element of it, that they're going straight away. I think most of the people that I see, as you sort of describe them at the start, are introverts. And generally what I have found, this is myself included being an introvert, we overanalyze what we're going to say. So I would assume that they're not jumping in as quickly. But when you're analyzing when someone else is talking, then you're not really listening as well. So yes, it's a really delicate balance. And that's what's so fascinating about the art of communication, and why also everyone should feel better about themselves, because nobody's got it right, right? Like it's a complete balancing act, right? Go too much in one direction and you're probably doing something else that not as perfect. So I think the one thing that I would also caveat all this with is that we're human. So I love the fact that you watch or listen to your podcast interviews back, because you never know what you do and how you're received until you do something like that, or you have someone else do it for you. But also I think in a way, this, if we collectively strive to be perfect, then it does put a lot of pressure on ourselves as well, right? So I think sometimes it's about connecting with people and being present and riffing off someone. And if we go on tangents, that happens in our normal life, and I think that's a little bit of that is beautiful. And I think if we try to be too perfect and robotic, then we lose some of that authenticity. So I try and practice, and I try and get my clients as well to be a little bit more like they would be in a one-on-one conversation. And obviously not everything that we would do in a one-on-one conversation is relevant for the corporate world, but if you think about it, in a one-on-one conversation, we're very authentic. We look at people in the eye. We do very appropriate hand gestures, and we'd normally talk with a congruence to what we're saying, and we wouldn't be using death by PowerPoint. And so if you're going to a group setting and you're going to change all of those things, you're going to not look at people in the eye properly, you're going to have death by PowerPoint, you're going to structure things in a very odd manner, you're going to have a monotone voice, you're not going to show your hands because your viewer is just your face. I mean, all these things is just so odd. So I think trying to keep it true to how you operate when it's a one-on-one conversation has always been a really good yardstick for me anyway.
I think that's really powerful advice. I haven't heard anyone say that before, because again, one thing that I've learned about public speaking is that it's not about you, it's about them. And as soon as you make it all about you, then that's when you're not doing the audience any favors. You're not going to bring your best self to the presentation. So for me, what's really helped is, what value do I want to give? What can I offer in this meeting setting?
Absolutely.
As opposed to just making it all about me and my thoughts and my belief. But let's really take this way back. Let's say that somebody is listening to this right now that is very introverted, as some of the technology professionals I work with are, especially, I hate to say it, especially women. You know, there is definitely a confidence gap there. There's certainly a gender pay gap. That's a whole other topic in itself, but there's also a confidence gap. And I would love to see more women stand up, speak up, and demand what they want. And I think if we all did that and we all cheered each other on, encouraged each other to do that, we wouldn't have a gender pay gap, right? I think as women, we need to also ask for what we want and what we deserve. But if there's a female listening to this right now that struggles to just speak up in meeting and she doesn't feel like she's being seen and heard, any advice for her listening to this right now?
Yeah, of course. There would be two things that I would say. So if someone was coming to me like that, number one would be to write down a list of at least 20 things that they bring to the table, essentially. Because if you're going into a conversation with senior stakeholders or someone else and you're feeling like, oh, they know more than me, or I'm a little bit more junior to them, or the men in this room are more technical, as an example, what I would generally get my clients to do is write down 20 reasons why they deserve to be at that table. And generally people will say, I can't think of 20 things. And I will always say, you have to, you will, trust me. So it will be hard, but come up with at least 20 things. And just by going through that process, it will change the whole dynamics of how you're feeling and how you're showing up, because I've seen it time and time again. The other thing that I would say would be an exercise I did with this one client that he found particularly helpful. And it was to get himself, so I would ask anyone that's listening that feels like they don't want to speak up or they have trouble speaking up, is just imagine for a moment that you're sitting opposite yourself and you're a version of you that's retired. So you're no longer working and you're sitting in some armchair and you're talking to this current version of yourself. And I would love for you to just have a moment to think about what advice you would give yourself, because chances are you're not going to say, yeah, I don't want to talk, or everyone knows better than me. Chances are you're going to say, I don't want to be here and be wishing I spoke up and sitting on all of that knowledge. So I think it can be very powerful if people can sit in that for even a minute or two and imagine, because it's that perspective that I think you talked about earlier that sometimes we that are in our heads forget about. So it's come out of your inner mind for a moment and think about what really matters and whether that's how you want to show up and continue to show up.
I talk about this actually quite a bit. I was talking, have a conversation about everything you just said then, this whole future casting and thinking about ourselves at the end of our lives. And I think about it quite a lot actually, because it helps me make decisions. And any time that I think to myself, would I regret this? If the answer is yes, I'm doing it. Because my ultimate fear is not looking silly, is not making a mistake, is not stumbling over my words in a presentation. Yeah, that's going to happen. That's all part of life and my journey. What my ultimate fear is getting to the end of my life and being on my deathbed and going, I wish I had done this, or I'd wish I'd done that. That scares me more than going and doing a presentation and stuffing up. Yes. And I think that the way we look at, people don't want to talk about death, but I think it is a really, it's our biggest teacher. Because if we were just going to be here forever, we would delay things. We go, oh, put that back, you know, someday, one day. Well, that you're not going to be here forever. You're here for such a short amount of time. Why let fear hold you back? Why let other people's opinion of you hold you back? Like, I just think it's so sad that there's so many people out there with such untapped potential because they're concerned about what their family, co-workers think of them. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, you know? And I think fear, when we talk about communication and asking for what we want and public speaking, it's massive. It's the biggest thing that holds so many people back. So going back to that whole topic of fear and you addressing your fear,
yeah,
what let's talk about what you've gained, and because you've turned your fear now into an opportunity. And I think that is so powerful. So you looking back to younger version of Emily and doing the whole mirror piece that you just said then, what would you tell her at the start of her career journey and public speaking journey?
I've thought about this many times, and I feel like if I could go back and talk to the earlier version of myself, I don't think I would believe it. That would be the first thing. If I said what I'm doing now, I don't think I would believe it. But I think it's that element of what's the worst that can actually happen? And I think about it, I actually always think of this analogy of tightrope walking. So I find that people that do get really nervous about public speaking, it's almost like they're imagining that they're walking a tightrope over maybe like up 100 stories between two buildings, and they've got no safety net. And of course, you're going to be petrified, right? I mean, if I felt like I was doing that in my mind, and I had metaphorically done that before and felt like I'd fallen, I wouldn't want to get up there and do it again. So I think it's this aspect of reframing. What are the consequences, like you were talking about before? Are you really going to die? Do you really have no safety net? And if you do, then that would be what I would get people to think about, is you have to reframe that in your mind. And that doesn't come overnight, but if you can start to pick that apart, even putting it on paper and reframing it will get you to think completely differently about that consequence, if that makes sense. And you could imagine that if you then got back on the tightrope and you feel like, ah, okay, if I stuff it up, if I go blank, as an example, I go blank. I'm human. I'm not going to let that define me. I'm not going to let that worry me. I'm not going to let shame and embarrassment be something I feel anymore about that. Okay, I have a safety net. And then when I'm walking out there, I feel like, oh, I can do this. I'm okay. Like, it might be a little bit as you get going, but you know that you're going to be okay. And I think that would be perhaps an analogy that I would try and share to my younger self and go through some exercises around that to really try and get that person, whether it was me or someone else, to understand that it's actually not the end of the world. And as soon as you realize that, and as soon as you feel comfortable and you're happy that you're not going to let to be ashamed of something or be embarrassed or realize that your career is over, then everything else starts to become easier.
Yeah, I think you just made some really good points there, because we do have this tendency to focus on the worst case scenario. Oh God, I'm going to be embarrassed and it's going to ruin my career. And it's not going to do that. And if you are working for an organization that is that intense, then maybe it's time to question a few things. But exactly. Yeah, like you said, we all make mistakes. Nothing ever goes completely to plan. No, and I've learned over the years to manage my own expectations. Exactly. The only ever time that I've been disappointed in myself or the outcome is when my expectations have not been managed. And I've tied, like I said, my whole sense of worth into that what I wanted to have happen, it doesn't happen. That's when I spiral, and that's when I get into a really sort of bad place. So yeah, again, managing our own expectations. But that's such powerful advice. Like there is a springboard underneath the tightrope. You know, if you fall, which you're going to fall, because guess what? You're doing it for the first time. It's going to be bumpy. Exactly. You're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
You're just going to bounce back up and keep on going and keep on going, and it'll get easier.
Yeah. And I think comedians have a lot that we can learn from. I always look at comedians now and see when they're having a conversation, if it's on live TV as an example, and they say the wrong thing or they forget what they're saying and they don't care. And I think I was even watching Adam Sandler give some sort of a speech recently, and I don't know, maybe this was planned on his part, but he was giving a thank you speech for some award that he'd won, and he was joking that he had, if when the guy told him the award, like his agent, he couldn't hear him very well, he said. and he thought that he won like the sexiest man alive award. And look, that probably was him cracking a joke, but I was just thinking that a comedian, they have every safety net in the world. They do not care, and they have a fallback for everything, right? If they forget what they're saying, they have a funny way to come out of it. So I think if we can learn a little bit from a comedian and use some of that in the professional world, I think it would be an absolute game changer.
I agree. And also not take ourselves and our work so seriously.
Yeah.
God, that's been my journey as well. As like, actually, how can I have more fun in my day? How can I bring more play into my work? Like, not everything has to be life and death and so serious. And, you know, it's really interesting at the start of the year when I was coming back into things in January and I was sort of easing myself in, I went from like this nice vacation holiday mode to all of a sudden back in work mode. And I was like, Georgina, how many times are you going to do this where you just go full steam ahead, 100 miles an hour, just learn just relax into the year, have some fun, have some play. You know, nothing has to be so serious. I think yes. That's also a big lesson for me in my career and public speaking journey, podcasting. Have fun.
Have fun.
God, like again, talking back to like life or death, like we are all going to die. I want to look back and go, God, I had a good time. God, I laughed. And that's the one thing actually for me. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well, is that we this whole word of success in our society and what that looks like and what it means to be successful, I think completely needs to be reframed. Because in my mind now, successful week is, have I had fun? How often have I laughed? Yes, of course, you want metrics and things to go well. You want to feel like you're making progress. But success without fulfillment to me is the ultimate failure. And I want to have a good time. I'm on this planet to have some fun, to learn a lot, to make some progress, but not take things so seriously, you know, including myself. That's the thing. Yes. I don't take myself so seriously anymore. I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, and probably where all the fear comes in of public speaking. It's like, oh God, you know, I'm going to stuff up and won't make a fool of myself. Who cares? No one cares. Guess what? No one cares as much as you do. That's what I've come to realize. Everyone's forgotten about it 5 minutes later, and you're still 100%. Dwelling on it months afterwards and not speaking up again. Everyone's forgotten about it. You're punishing yourself.
Yes. Oh, 100%. And that is a very important lesson to learn. And it's one I always talk to my clients about, is that, and you think after that presentation, everyone's thinking about you. They are definitely not thinking about you like that. You're the only one thinking about you. And I think I don't have that thought of success in my mind, but I have the thought of, I don't know if it was a couple of years ago, I made a really conscious decision that I would no longer feel ashamed. I literally said it to myself, like, that's it. I don't care. I'm never letting myself feel ashamed about something that relates to being human, right? Like making a mistake, looking nervous, etc. Because, you know, I went through my journey of being terrified of public speaking. And then it was great when I improved. But as soon as I became a public speaking coach, all that pressure came back. And this would happen with people, not in that same way, but, you know, as they go up in their career, maybe they felt better, but then they take on more responsibility and then they have more people that are reporting to them and more pay, and then they get more nervous. Is I just decided I am not going to beat myself up and feel ashamed for being nervous. Yes, I'm a public speaking coach, but I'm normal like the rest of us, right? And, you know, I'm human, and I'm not going to apologize for that. So I think that was very liberating when I realized, okay, I don't have that expectation of myself, and I'm absolutely not going to stand for it. And therefore, you free yourself up, and you automatically have that safety net as well, metaphorically.
I completely agree. And one word that keeps on being thrown around a lot is authenticity when it comes to personal branding and putting yourself out there. And I've always said it, people buy from people. And if I was choosing two public speaking coaches and I had one that was all polished and perfect and would never say a stumble word or never say a filler, I'd go, oh, you're just not for me. I want someone that's raw, that's, that stuffs up a little bit, that's real, that's authentic, that I can relate to, that whole relatability piece. I want Emily, because she's not coming on as like the next TEDx speaker with all suited and booted. She's raw, she's real, she's authentic, she's stuffing up, she's stumbling over her words a little bit. But I want her because I can relate to her. And I think that whole relatability piece, especially when it comes to public speaking communication, is sometimes a missing piece, because people do buy from people. And like you said, the human element is so important when it comes to anything, when it comes to relatability, when it comes to, you know, if we're buying off each other. I know for even being a recruiter and having a recruitment company, I would like to think that because obviously I put myself out there a bit more and people get to know me, they know I'm not perfect. They know I'm, you know, definitely another flawed human being like them. They're like, oh, I quite like Georgie. You know, I want to go and work with her, as opposed to Mr. Joe Blog suited and booted down the road. So I think that whole authentic piece, like you say, is really, really important. And I would much rather have you as a personal speech coach than some person that was doing, you know, talking all over the world and seemed to have it all together. I think that's really key.
Oh, well, I mean, the good thing is I know I'm not for everyone, and nobody's for everyone either, right? And I think that's the other thing is, yes, we buy from people that we like and we connect with, and there'll be people that won't connect with me, and that's absolutely fine. And I have let go of the need to try and be everyone's everything. And that is absolutely okay as well. So, yeah, I think we do buy off people that we like, and we do want to do business with people that we like. And that's never going to change. So I think being authentic also helps other people feel comfortable to be their authentic self. And I think that's what I resonate with when I connect with someone else and I feel like I'm getting the real them, is it's like, oh, you're okay with your flaws. That means I can be comfortable, you know, with my flaws. So it's a win-win.
I completely agree. And I just like to think that if you met me in public, I am exactly this. Like, I'm not, this is who I am. I'm just a chatty person. I love having good conversations, and I love it when people message me on LinkedIn, love when people pop up to me. And I'm sure that you'd be exactly the same if we bumped into each other, you know, like, oh, hi, Emily, like exactly who you are online, you are offline. I think that's what's maybe missing in the world. And when people look for coaches and mentors, that's what they want, that authenticity piece. But look, I could honestly sit and chat to you all day. But look, for those people that listen to this podcast now and they want to improve their communication, they want help with public speaking, whether it's just presenting in a boardroom or actually stepping onto stage, where can I send people to find out more about yourself and your coaching?
Oh, sure. So I'm generally quite active on LinkedIn. I haven't been posting on social media because I've had my baby 7 months ago, but I'm definitely going to get back into it.
Yeah.
So LinkedIn is my platform of choice, or they can go onto my website, www.emilyedgley.com. And either of those places are good, and they can contact me via LinkedIn or via my website. And I also have a communicator. I also have a newsletter called The Magnetic Communicator, which generally goes out once a fortnight. So I have had a 7-month hiatus, but it will be coming back again in March. So it's a good time to jump on board.
Fantastic. We'll put all the links below. But Emily, it's been great having you on, and I've definitely learned a lot. And thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.